As Ohio goes, so goes the nation. In practical terms, that means every 2 years, the national news media, that's us, descend on the Buckeye State to talk to regular folks and to politicians in the lead-up to elections. The reason is simple. For more than a century, Ohio has been a political bellwether and the definition of a swing state. Name a demographic, any demographic, and Ohio's got it. Religious conservatives, union members, ex-urban professionals. In 50-50 nation, Ohio is a 50-50 state. To win, Democrats and Republicans have to rally their base, energize the apathetic, and battle over elusive independence. In 2004, political analysts swooned over the Republicans' sophisticated and extremely effective get-out-the-vote effort here. But this time around, with a controversial gubernatorial candidate at the top of the ticket in this state, scandals at both the state and national level, they face an uphill battle. In this hour, we'll dissect the political map of Ohio and talk to party leaders about how to win this hotly contested political battleground, plus an analysis from political junkie Ken Rudin of the Ground War and some other swing states. Later on in the program, Ohio State football is number one in the college rankings again. We're going to be talking with Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch about the Buckeyes. But first, Ohio, the anatomy of a swing state. If you live in Ohio, how's the battle being waged in your area? We also want to hear from voters in places like Pennsylvania, Iowa, Arizona, and other swing states. How is the campaign unfolding where you live? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And we begin with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our resident political junkie. He's with us here at the COSI Center in Columbus, Ohio. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks,
as
Neil.
Usual,
nice
Ken.
They really like you. I held up the applause sign.
Uh-huh. How important is Ohio in this election?
Well, it's extremely important. As you point out, it's a state that elected George W. Bush, re-elected George W. Bush in 2004, and all the issues that are playing nationally, and that is Iraq, and that's the uncertainty about the economy, the so-called culture of corruption, questions about congressional leadership in Washington, and the latest, the Mark Foley scandal, all those issues that are hurting the Republican Party nationally are being played out in individual races here in Ohio.
Where? Which races in particular? Do you think?
Well, if you want to look at the Iraq war, look at the Senate race between Mike DeWine and his challenger Sherrod Brown. Iraq is a key issue there. If you're looking at questions about the congressional leadership in Washington, Deborah Price of Columbus, a longtime member of the leadership, who has taken money from Mark Foley, so that's become an issue in her race against Kilroy, you know, one of the possible pickups for the Democrats. If you're talking about corruption, well, I mean, Bob Taft, the governor of Ohio, is probably the least popular governor in the country. The latest poll I saw had him with a 12% approval rating. That's not much more than Congress, but it's really the lowest in the country. And you have, you know, scandals in Washington, in with Tom Noe, a Republican.
Coingate.
The Coingate is exactly right, who had, you know, also pleaded guilty to giving illegal money to the Bush campaign in 2004. And you have the Bob Ney incident, the longtime, very popular congressman from, you know, eastern Ohio who's now stepping down from running again because of a corruption plea, his involvement with Jack Abramoff, the convicted lobbyist. Mm-hmm. So it's all here.
It's all here. And is this an indication of what's going on elsewhere in the country? For example, in the gubernatorial race, you have Republican Ken Blackwell succeeding after, I think, what, it's been 20 years of Republican governors here and hoping to succeed. He's racing against Democratic Congressman Ted Strickland. And at least in the opinion polls, Blackwell is trailing.
Well, that's not a surprise, given the fact that Taft is so unpopular, although he's term-limited, he couldn't run again even if he wanted to. But there's also the time for a change, as you point out. You've had 16 years of Republican domination of the government, all statewide officials, the state legislature. And if things are not working, look, we saw that in the 70s and 80s when Democrats controlled things. If you look, under Dick Celeste and John Gilligan, Democratic governors, and when they were not so popular, they were voted out in favor of Republicans. So this is a bad time to be a Republican, especially in a state like this, which is so crucial to not only reelecting Bush in 2004, but getting a Republican elected president in 2008.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us now is John Green, a director of the Bliss Institute for Applied Politics at the University of Akron. He's with us here at the COSI Center in Columbus. Pleasure to have you on the program today.
Good to be with you.
Why is Ohio such a battleground consistently, do you think?
Well, I think in many ways Ken Rudin actually described why it is. There's no great mystery to it. It's because Ohio's a very, very diverse state. Parts of Ohio look very much like the northeastern part of the United States. Parts of it look like the South. Many of the burgeoning suburban areas resemble the suburbs of the West and the West Coast. And then, of course, there's a lot of Ohio that, surprise, surprise, is very Midwestern. So what we have within the boundaries of this state, more by political accident than anything else, is all of the different, all the diversity in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is complicated or exacerbated by the fact that Ohio has a large number of cities. We have 8 major cities. In fact, analysts often talk about Ohio as being made up of city-states: Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton, Toledo, Youngstown. These are all places that have each their own political culture, their own economic base, their own newspaper, their own media. And so really what you have is a collection of different types of political regions with all within a single state. And that makes for an enormous amount of political competition.
And what about the party structures? Of late, in recent years, the Democratic Party structure in this state has been, well, pretty weak.
That's probably an understatement. Historically, Ohio has been a state of strong political organizations, both Democratic and Republican. But in the pantheon of political organizations, typically the Republicans have been much stronger. And in the last 20 years, the Ohio Republican Party has probably been the strongest state Republican party in the country. And the Democrats have been quite weak, and that has made it difficult for them to contest elections. But, you know, there are cycles in Ohio politics, just like there are in national politics, and we may be coming to the end of an era of Republican dominance, and we may see the Democratic organization being resurgent these days.
Let's see if we can get questions in from the audience. And again, listeners, if you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, talk@npr.org. We're also taking questions from the audience with us here in Columbus. Please.
Yes, I'm Kathy from
Hold on. We're just getting your microphone up. Okay. Go ahead there.
Yes, I'm Kathy from Columbus, Ohio. And I've just been wondering for 2 years now why so much is made of Ohio reelected the president when many other states had a majority of voters who voted for the president, and he won a majority of the electoral votes. So I'm just curious, why is it such a big deal?
Ken?
Well, that's a good question. basically, we saw in 2004, everybody says that it was Florida that elected George Bush to begin with, but what you're saying is absolutely true. Had Al Gore won his home state of Tennessee, that would have made the difference. Had Al Gore won West Virginia or Arkansas or New Hampshire, that would have made the difference, even though we remember Florida. But basically, when we look at a presidential election, we seem to know what state is going what way. The polls are pretty accurate. It was always, to the last second, it was always Ohio that was up in the air. All the other states, we knew that Florida was trending Republican. We knew that the West Coast was trending Democratic. Texas, you know, and New England, all that. So we narrowed it down. There were some states, of course, that we didn't know where it would go, but it was Ohio that was going to make the difference, and we knew that that was going to be it for either side.
Mm-hmm. Yet it was obviously razor thin in 2004, and I was just going to ask John Green, what's changed, do you think, since then?
Well, I think the underlying dynamics have not changed. In fact, Ohio is very, very competitive, but I think the difference is the issues. In 2004, here in Ohio, we had a very complicated agenda with significant minorities of Ohioans concerned about the economy, concerned about foreign policy, and concerned about social issues. After all, we had one of the famous bans on same-sex marriage on the ballot here in Ohio, and that's changed a little bit. As Ken Rudin indicated, the economy is much larger, more prominent among Ohioans this year, and also this whole question of corruption has risen to the surface. So we have a different agenda, same competitive system, and so we have a little bit different political dynamic.
Thanks very much for the question. Appreciate it. And let me ask also, one of the key differences last time around was the so-called ground war, John Green, and people still think the Republicans have similar advantages this time around?
Well, it's certainly the case that the Republicans in 2004 built a very sophisticated grassroots organization, and they integrated the presidential campaign with the state party, with the county Republican parties, many of which are traditionally strong organizations, and that was absolutely crucial in 2004. It's important to remember, though, that the Democrats, with their allies in the 527 committees, a new form of political organization, and labor unions, also mounted a very fierce campaign.
Let's see if we can get a caller in. This is Michael. Michael's calling us from Bettendorf in Iowa.
Yes, that's correct. Hi, nice to get onto the show. Just a quick comment. We have a pretty nasty mudslinging event in eastern Iowa. There's a seat left open by a congressman who's running for governor, and the Democratic person is trying to paint the Republican as sympathetic to George Bush and stay the course, et cetera. The Republican is calling the Democratic challenger a, if I can summarize, a communist, sympathizing, Taliban negotiating liberal. And so it's getting pretty nastier. I think it's turning a lot of people off from the elections in general. I just wanted to take your comments, and I'll take them off the air.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
I'd like to know which one he was most upset about, the communist or the liberal. You know, you don't like the word liberal any these days. But, you know, that's basically the national theme for both parties. I mean, you have several independent Republicans, Republican members of Congress, who are shown some kind of an independent streak, and yet they're being painted as part of the – I mean, I saw commercials in my hotel room last night, the part of the Bush-Taft-Noe wing of the Republican Party. So whether you're independent or conservative or whatever, you're linked together, just like the same thing with the Democrats. Many Democrats are being painted as part of the Osama wing of the Democratic
Party.
Right,
Ted Kennedy and right. Nancy Pelosi. Yeah. Right. We're talking with Ken Rudin and John Green about the political battle going on in many swing states, especially here in Ohio. We're going to be back after a short break and listen to some professionals talk about this contest, and we're going to take your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We want to hear from voters in swing states, including Ohio. How's it going where you live? Email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan at the Battelle Studio at the COSI Science Center in Columbus, Ohio. With November the 7th just 4 weeks away, we're talking about the political battle over swing states, like Ohio, and how Democrats and Republicans can sway voters their way, the anatomy of a swing state. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our resident political junkie, is with us. We're also joined by John Green, director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron, currently a senior fellow at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life in Washington, D.C. Of course, you're invited to join us. For Ohio voters, if you're undecided what's pushing you one way or the other, we also want to hear from voters in other swing states, Indiana, Connecticut, New Mexico. How's the battle being waged where you live? Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're also getting questions from the audience here in Columbus. And we're going to turn now to two party insiders in Ohio. First, Joanne Davidson, co-chair of the Republican National Committee, and she headed the grassroots effort in Ohio, which brought the Republicans victory in 2004. Ms. Davidson is with us now at the COSI Theater in Columbus. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us a little bit about that deployment of your troops back in 04. How did you do it, and how did it help?
I think it made a huge difference, and I think it's already been stated that it was a cooperative effort between all parties. I think you need that kind of cooperation if you've got a strong state party that you belong to. If you can bring in then, as you'll remember, we had Senator Voinovich on the ballot, and we're able to actually marry that with the Bush-Cheney campaign and with our strong county organization. And we were all working towards the same goal, and that goal was to identify, to reach out to share information with, and to be sure that people who supported our candidates and our point of view actually got to the polls that day. It was, I think, probably the most extensive grassroots organization in all of the years I've been involved, which have been many years and many campaigns, that I have ever seen, and it was very successful. We were able to do that by recruiting volunteers, by training volunteers, by having a very solid program to follow, and actually then being able to implement it, which a lot of people thought we were not going to be able to do.
And a lot of people around the country are trying to duplicate the success of your effort last time around, this time around. But I wonder, have you been able, I've been reading in the papers, that recruitment of volunteers is not going so well this time around?
Oh, I think there are a lot of people that would like to think that as far as the Republican Party is concerned, but that's not the case. I've seen some articles that talk about our volunteers being worn out. That just is not true. Last weekend, we had what we call our Super Saturday, which is one of our run-ups towards Election Day. We made over 150,000 contacts, over 100,000 calls, over 50,000 door knocks. We never really got to that rate in the Bush-Cheney campaign in 04 until about 5 days before Election Day. So I think we've got the enthusiasm and the support of our volunteers, and I think that hopefully we'll do just as well as we did in 04 in implementing the grassroots plan.
Let's turn now to Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, a Democrat from the Toledo area, here with us also at the COSI Center. Thanks very much for coming down to see us.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Unless all those troops come out and all those phone calls are rewarded by votes, this could be a pretty good year for Democrats in Ohio. How are you going to be countering those efforts that we just heard about?
Well, of course, our candidates are supporting change, a new direction for our state, and a new direction for America. We have very competitive seats right here where we are today in Franklin County, Mary Jo Kilroy, and leading right now. Very, very hotly contested race, and Bob Schimansky coming up fast down in the Cincinnati area, John Cranley, and Vic Wilson, Dr. Wilson, coming up in the polls there. In the seat where Bob Ney resigned, we have a great prosecutor, Zach Space, who we believe will be joining us next January. And then in the two seats where we have vacating members, where they're leaving, Ted Strickland to become the next governor of Ohio, Charlie Wilson, and then up north, Sherrod Brown leaving to become the next senator from Ohio, we have Betty Sutton. And then we have some dark horses out there, such as Robin Wyrick, who is working her heart out in the northern part of the state. So we're very Democrats are very competitive in Ohio this year.
Are you getting enthusiastic recruits, volunteers?
Let me tell you, in my home county of Lucas County, we had a dinner the other night. There were over 500 people. The newspapers all said we can't remember when 500 people showed up in Lucas County for a county dinner. Sherrod Brown had a big event over in Austintown the other evening. 1,000 people came. So the Democratic base is very energized here in Ohio. And people are calling for yard signs. They're calling to volunteer. People know America needs a change, and that change has to start here in Ohio.
Okay. Let's see if we can get a question in from the audience here in Columbus. Your name, please.
Hi, I'm Sharon, and I was wondering how politicians justify the amount of money, the millions of dollars that are spent on political campaigns on television, which get tiresome, and whether...
I just have to say that our colleagues in the commercial broadcast industry rather like them. But.
And whether TiVo and people's ability to fast forward through them has changed the philosophy of how political campaigns are run.
Joanne Davidson, get a response from you.
Well, I don't think it's changed the philosophy yet. It may have some impression on doing that, and I think all of us are concerned about the millions of dollars that are spent to reach voters. But we're a different society than we used to be. The old town hall meetings where people would come and listen to the candidates and give them an opportunity to meet them and speak with them are just very hard to do anymore. We see billions of dollars spent out there to actually market products to individuals. So you'll buy their toothpaste or you'll drink their soda pop or you will buy this kind of a car. These are decisions that are very important. They're critically important to the future of this country. So spending dollars to get your message out when that's the best way to reach voters is something that's going to be a necessary part of politics until we devise another way of doing that. And so I, like you, probably am troubled about the amount of money it's doing there, but I do think that the candidates have a right to reach out to the voters, let them know who they are, what they stand for, because these are important decisions that are made. They are, that this is a real choice in this particular election about which direction the country wants to go in. And I think we, you know, it takes dollars to actually get that message out there. The more that people are able to bypass those ads, obviously, the more that we will have to change the strategy. And it's already changing a great deal out there. People are going to other avenues. They're going to websites. They're going to other avenues in which they can get their messages. The important thing, in my estimation, is being able to get the information to the voter about the candidates, what they stand for, not just what they have done, but what they will do at this point in our country's history.
Marcy Kaptur?
I would love to respond to that and say that the political rot in both political parties, major parties in this country today, is due to money. And we need to get it out of the political system. If you look at the connection between CoinGate here in Ohio, Tom Noe from our home county, all the way up here to the State House, what was done, and then to Washington, where they came for fundraisers to help raise money for people that ran against me back in 2004, Dennis Hastert coming to those fundraisers, Robert Ney coming to those fundraisers. I personally experienced it. I've been in the House 24 years. I think I do speak with some knowledge of how the system functions. Ohio has as many people as it did 24 years ago, or around the same number, yet we're spending 10 to 20 times as much on campaigns. I would like to say this to my very good friend, Ms. Davidson, and that is, if Ohio really does set a course for the nation, why don't we work together across party lines for Ohio 2008, and let's take the money out, starting right here in Ohio. Let's figure out a way to have Lincoln-esque debates in every corner of this state with the candidates. The media would come. We simply have to reform this system, because everybody that gets in trouble over money.
I would think this would be a sincere question to me, but I didn't hear any of those objections when the 527 groups were spending millions and millions of dollars in Ohio in the 2004 election, and that was coming from the Democrat side. That was coming from the George Soroses and the Peter Lewises. I did not hear any objection to people and that money being spent to try to influence that election. I am always willing, Congresswoman, to work on a solution that gets our message out better. I just think we have to be honest about the fact that when you're talking about money, it's not just coming from one side. We were outspent in the state of Ohio in 2004, and that money all came in from outside. You outsourced all of your grassroots efforts in 2004 to labor unions and 527 groups. We did it in Ohio with volunteers, Ohioans talking to Ohioans.
If I could have a chance to respond to that,
and very quickly,
I agree,
because we do want to move on.
Both sides need disarmament, and neither one will do it alone. This is the most important issue facing our country. We are both of the age where we want to give our country over to the next generation in better shape than we found it. This is truly corrosive. It makes politics a dirty word. You are a good woman. I know your work from the State House here, and I know your work at the national level with the Republican Party. I would like to challenge you to work with me, get rid of them all, the 527s, all of this excess ads. I have some things I'd like to do with the media, but I really believe Ohio could set the pace for the nation by having debates, inviting all the candidates, and just letting the people listen. The national media would be there. We have to get the money out. It's wrong.
All right. Ken Rudin.
Just one quick point. I think it's very interesting that we're spending more on campaigns than ever before, and people are voting less than ever before. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think some of the negative ads are really designed to shut down turnout, to depress turnout. If you hit your opponent over and over again, you could depress the candidate's base, and their voters will not come out.
And John Green, let me ask you, are 527s, these outside groups that we were just hearing about that were so active in 2004, are they active again in 2006?
Oh, yes. We do have quite a number of outside groups, as well as the parties and the candidates active here in Ohio. I think the high level of spending by these groups reflects two things. One is, as the questioner suggested in her question, the traditional media buys are not as effective as they used to be. And so candidates and parties and groups have to spend a lot more money to get the same level of attention. But also the fact that groups are turning more and more to grassroots activities, such as the Republicans did in 2004. Many Democrats are doing this year in Ohio, reflects some of the limitations of these large amounts of money.
Mm-hmm. We're here at the COSI Center, the Battelle Studio, if you want to know the exact location, in Columbus, Ohio. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about the anatomy of a swing state. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is George. George is calling us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Yes, Neil. I would like to ask Ken what he thinks of Jim Davis's chances to be the next governor of Florida. It seems as though there are people that don't think he stands a prayer.
Well, Jim Davis is a member of Congress from the Tampa area in Florida, and he's running to – he and the Republican candidate are trying to succeed Jeb Bush, who is retiring because of term limits. The polls do show the Republican candidate Charlie Crist up ahead, and one of the reasons is Crist seems to be more of a likable, folksy kind of candidate. Jim Davis is a serious candidate. You'd think, though, that given the fact that Catherine Harris is on the ballot for the Republicans in Florida, that, you know, the Democrats might get a boost out of that. But a lot of it is personality. A lot of it is the fact that Jeb Bush leaves office after 8 years, still very popular. And I think some of that popularity is rubbing off on Crist. I don't think Jim Davis doesn't have a chance, but Crist should hold on and win. Hmm.
Thanks very much for the call.
Certainly.
Let's turn to a question here in Columbus.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Sure.
Anne from the city of Columbus. And I have a question about redistricting. If you look at our districts in Ohio, you will see a lot of strange configurations. And anti-gerrymandering legislation has been introduced in Ohio since 1978, and nothing has successfully been changed. My question, and particularly since this is a national program, where can we look for an example of a system that is fair and representative of the political makeup of a state? I believe in searching and reapplying.
Let me turn to Ken Rudin for an answer to that, and then we'll get some comments on redistricting.
Well, the perfect example is Iowa. Iowa has a nonpartisan commission that somehow the legislature agreed to, and they've divided not because of partisan interests, not because of the Democrats or the Republicans controlling the legislature. It's really completely nonpartisan, and you've had very, very close calls because of that. A caller earlier was talking about this open congressional seat there, and it's really now 50-50 in this open seat where the guy's running for governor because it was not done with political purposes. But, you know, we talk about the Tom DeLays of the world who have redrawn the lines in Texas, but when Democrats had control of Texas and California, they did the same exact thing. So while we like to talk about how this being a Republican problem, it's really whoever's in power has really been drawing the lines. Iowa may be the way to change it.
And Marcy Kaptur, let me ask you, if Democrats do take control of the state legislature here in Ohio, are they going to redraw the congressional lines?
By the U.S. Constitution, they have to redraw them every 10 years, and that's happened to me many times now. My district
well,
is different than it
in
was.
In Texas, and the court said it's okay to draw them any time. So if
yes.
you get control of the legislature, you're going to redraw them.
I personally favor the Iowa or Arizona systems. I think that people should compete on their ideas and looking forward. I think one of the problems with the political ads today is they look backwards and they say sort of shaded truths about one another. And even in the governor's race here or in the Senate race, you really don't hear what people are going to do when they get to Washington, what they're going to do in Columbus. So we're sort of buried in people saying bad things about one another on these ads. Mm-hmm. I really like the idea of a system where we compete. I'm willing to compete. That's the whole nature of our society. It's how we go on in education. It's how we build a business. Competition is fundamental to who we are. Dr. Green got ahead in his work because he's able, and he competed on his ability. So I think that people who run for political office should compete also. Mm-hmm. And I like the Iowa and the Arizona.
Joanne Davidson, would you agree with that?
Well, if we're talking particularly, I know she was talking on a national level, but talking a little locally on an Ohio level, the voters at the state of Ohio had an opportunity. on the ballot last year, there was an issue that would have changed the way in which we do redistricting in the state of Ohio, and the voters turned it down. It's very hard to come out with some type of a plan that everybody will believe it is a fair plan, particularly perhaps if you're a political party that is out of the majority but thinks you're going to get back into the majority, so you want the power to be able to do that. We've had numerous issues that have been before the legislature. We've had numerous attempts, and I believe just in this session of the legislature, an attempt to get bipartisan support to put an issue back on the ballot that was not successful because there were not enough votes from the majority part, the minority party, to do that. So I think it's a very good question. I think it's something we need to continue to examine and look at whether we want to adopt something in other states, but they've already turned down a couple of opportunities to do that.
All right. When we come back from a short break, more about the anatomy of a swing state, plus topping a poll of a different sort, Ohio State football is number one. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Columbus, Ohio. And here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. Congressman Jim Colby has confirmed a report that several years ago his staff notified House leaders of inappropriate contact between former Representative Mark Foley and underage pages. Meanwhile, House Speaker Dennis Hastert said today he believes his staff has acted appropriately in handling the situation. And China says North Korea must face some punitive actions for testing a nuclear device. The comments today from China's UN ambassador suggest Beijing may be willing to impose some form of Security Council sanctions against Pyongyang. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow at this time on Talk of the Nation, design and style and how it can change our lives. Alain de Botton talks about his new book, The Architecture of Happiness. Coming up on Thursday, a special broadcast on deaf education and deaf culture will provide live, real-time captioning for the deaf community. For more information on how to access the captioning, you can go to npr.org/deafculture. Deaf culture, all one word. That's coming up on Thursday on Talk of the Nation. Right now, we're talking about the anatomy of a swing state in a special broadcast from the Battelle Studio at the COSI Center in Columbus, Ohio. COSI is short for the Center of Science and Industry, and we're helping member station WOSU launch their new digital facilities here in the museum. Our guests are Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. Also with us, John Green, professor of political science and director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. Also with us, Joanne Davidson, co-chair of the Republican National Committee, and Representative Marcy Kaptur, a Democrat who represents the Toledo area. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Tom, and Tom's calling from, I always get this wrong, Chillicothe, is that right?
Chillicothe.
All right, that's in Ohio. Anyway, go ahead.
I spoke with you before. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I thought this would be a unique opportunity to kind of voice my opinion regarding the anatomy of a swing state. As you said, you know, swing state implies that there's a lot of people in Ohio whose minds were not made up, and it drew a great deal of attention prior to the 2004 election. One of the things that really, well, quite frankly, disgusted me was the fact that being a swing state, being that we had a lot of undecided voters, that so many people fell prey to what I thought was a very easy argument that was framed in a prejudicial manner, the gay marriage debate. The fact that it was made so simple to get out the vote, whereas people, I think, really overlooked what the true matter was, what they're voting on in this election, the midterm election, which is the economy. The same deterioration, the same signs that showed that Ohio's economy was going bad, I think, were present in the 2004 election. But again, because there was a lot of undecided people, because I don't think that they knew the issues very well, the party in power currently took advantage of, quite frankly, what I think is the ignorance of the voters to make it real simple and easy as to who they should vote for, making the issue very simple.
We'll get answers to your question, Tom, but I think you've got other issues to monitor there where you are, so we're going to let you go.
Okie dokie.
Thanks very much, Tom. I wonder if we could get a response to that from Joanne Davidson.
Well, I certainly don't share the caller's opinion that the voters are ignorant. I think the voters obviously are very thoughtful voters out there. Obviously, some pay more attention than others pay attention to it. We have always in Ohio had series of issues that are on the ballot. We do this year. We're going to have issues on the ballot. They're going to have some influence probably on voter turnout under that situation. But as far as saying people were not aware of the issues in the 04 election, I don't agree with the caller. Respectfully do not agree with the caller on that. And I believe that the economic issues today that we have in play in the nation today, and certainly some in the state of Ohio, are much stronger. All of our economic indicators right now are much stronger than they have been in a long time. We have a 4.6% unemployment rate nationally. We have, as you know, the stock market breaking all-time highs. We've created 6.6 million jobs in 3 years. All of the economic indicators are very good right now, and I think people are paying attention to that, will pay attention to it as they vote this year, and will pay attention to the issue of national security.
Congresswoman?
Well, I think one of the reasons that Senator Kerry did not take Ohio in 2004 was simply because he didn't offer more on the economy. And I guess Ms. Davison and I look at the record differently. Ohio has the highest mortgage foreclosure rate in the country. Ford Motors' announcement recently, just in my district alone, will mean almost 800 direct and probably several thousand indirect jobs will be gone. We're trying desperately to save that particular facility. The situation in Ohio, it has not, Wall Street may be doing very well, but they're trading Chinese products up there. They're taking in Saudi money that they made off of rising gas prices and that period of very high prices, which I have no doubt will go up after this election again. And so there's a difference between Wall Street and Main Street. And we need people in the Congress and in our governorships who have a priority on the economy. I don't think that happened enough in 2004, and we need to hear more now through the clutter of all these ads about what people will do for our state and for our country. Let me just put one fact on the record because of your audience, and if I could say something about Mark Foley in Florida and that scandal and that tragedy. And that is, no, everybody's looking at the morality of what happened there in terms of the pages and so forth, as we should. But nobody's looking at the fact that Mark Foley was a bank for the Republican Party in the House. And maybe the reason people looked away is because of what he was worth. And then in order to deal with him, they had to shut down a bank. He had one of the top accounts in the Congress for dollars remaining in his campaign fund, had just given $500,000 to the Republican National Committee. This is a member of Congress. He's not alone in those who are able to raise big money. But perhaps, and I'm sure the ethics investigation will follow the string wherever it may lead, but we have to look at what he did. He was from West Palm Beach, Florida. He was a big money center for the leaders in the House. And we shouldn't forget to look again at reforming on the money side.
Let's
and
give
I
a chance
we
to respond,
should
yes.
not, obviously, we should not jump to any conclusions here. What we have going on is a House Ethics Committee, and I believe the Congresswoman has faith in her own ability of there to police themselves. We've got a very strong investigation going on that is going to find. Now, wait a minute. The reputation of the body in which you are a part. Remember, I served for a few years as Speaker of the House here in Ohio, and I know you that your key responsibility is a reputation of the institution that you represent. Hmm. And that's the kind of investigation that's going on in a bipartisan way in Washington, D.C., and to jump to any conclusions that people look the other way because of somebody being a bankrolling is an inappropriate statement to make.
We're going to wind up by asking John Green to give us some predictions on how he thinks. It's a month away. Things can change. A month ago, the races in this state and around the country looked very different.
Yes, they do. In fact, I was with a bunch of colleagues just about a week ago, and we were all doing what political scientists do when they get together, which is to handicap elections. And it looked to us at that point that it would be a good Democratic year, but not a great Democratic year. But, of course, things have changed. Even in the last week or so, I think the number of competitive races have expanded. I think it can really go either way here in Ohio as well at the national level. And I think what we're going to see ultimately is the strength of the campaigns and this grassroots effort that we've been talking about earlier. And it may very well be that if the Republicans are as effective as they were in 2004, that the Democratic gains will be minimized. On the other hand, if the Democrats can compete with the Republicans at the grassroots, it may be a very good year for them indeed.
John Green, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time. Our thanks as well to Joanne Davidson, co-chair of the Republican National Committee. Thank you very much for joining us here today. And to Representative Marcy Kaptur, a Democrat who represents the Toledo area. And I guess we have to thank Ken Rudin, too. When we come back, we're going to be talking about something that will unite everyone in this audience anyway, Ohio State football.